Why did Jesus? I thought they'd melt the turkey. Book 5, chapter 4. Crumbs from the master's table. It may have been news of the attempt to make Jesus king, carried by Passover pilgrims to Jerusalem, which was responsible for a further deputation of scribes and Pharisees to Galilee. It was obvious that they had come with the intention of joining issue with Jesus immediately. The feeding of the multitudes had given them the clue to their approach. It would have been impossible for all the people to have observed the important rite of washing the hands before eating. The scribes had little difficulty in discovering the disciples at fault in this. They approached Jesus. "Why walk not thy disciples according to the tradition of the elders, but eat bread with unwashed hands?" They could not have been prepared for the withering attack that met them. The battle was joined. No quarter would be asked or given until the end. Jesus, neither justifying nor apologizing for his disciples, exposed the fatal gulf between the law of God and their tradition. We can hardly appreciate the full significance of the crude blasphemy which the rabbinic writings contained, and which were included in a tradition made more binding than Scripture itself. For the first time he flung at them the charge of hypocrisy. "Well hath Isaiah prophesied of you hypocrites. As it is written, this people honoureth me with their lips, but their heart is far from me. Howbeit in vain do they worship me, teaching for doctrine the commandments of men." They must have been startled by this sudden attack, with this accusation made more devastating by his holy wrath. But he had not finished with them. The crowd stood a little way off, watching in amazement this wandering rabbi from Nazareth, who'd become a symbol of fiery judgment. He returned to the attack, dealing a death blow to their traditions, exposing them as self-condemned to all who had ears to hear. Not only did they set aside the law of God, they positively rejected it, in order to replace it with commandments ingeniously compiled to serve their selfish ends. He quoted the case of Corban, by which a man might be released from God's command to honour his father and mother by dedicating his wealth to the altar. But the sin was more terrible than that. It freed him by deceit from obedience to God. His gift was a pretense. He was under no obligation, in spite of his promised Corban, to lose his money. "And," said Jesus, "many such like things do ye." Turning to the wandering multitude, he commanded them to come near and hear his answer to the charge. He spoke with great earnestness, compelling their attention. "Hearken unto me, every one of you, and understand," he said. And a moment later, "If any man have ears to hear, let him hear." He was about to tell them something of the greatest importance, which shows the striking contrast between his teaching and that of the scribes. They had found fault because the disciples had eaten with unwashed hands, thereby defiling the food they ate. That, he maintained, was impossible. Defilement does not go into a man from without. It comes out from within. Here lay the essential difference between the commandments of men and the law of God. The scribes supported the teaching that said that because the hands were not washed, the bread was polluted and the eater defiled. Jesus said it was what is in the heart of man which issued out of him, in evil thoughts, murders, pride and wickedness which defiled him. And he showed that the scribes were fundamentally wrong, because by a tradition of externalism they sought by outward observations to observances to influence the inner man. That could never be. The law of God presented by Christ addressed itself to the inward man, transforming the heart, and therefore the qualities which issue from the heart, the character and conduct. The whole of the teaching of Christ crystallized in the Sermon on the Mount and was dedicated to this task. The disciples, on reaching the house, asked him for a clearer understanding of this, and he gave them the appalling catalogue of depravity hidden in the natural heart. He was also given them hour by hour and day by day, the perfect example of the qualities which shone forth from a heart which was entirely dedicated to God. The scribes do not appear to have any desire to renew their attack, and nor were they now to have a further opportunity. It was still the obvious desire of Jesus to move away from the crowds and find a secluded place where, free from interruption, he could continue to instruct his disciples and unfold to them a picture of the days that lay ahead. They must not be irretrievably lost when they see the nature of the crown which is destined for his head. They must remember these words in the Galilean hills. The desert on the eastern shore of the lake land had proved to be too near the centre of his popularity. This time, he decided to withdraw far beyond the range of the importunate crowds. He travelled northwestwards for about 30 miles into the mountains of Upper Galilee, reaching at last the borders of Tyre and Sidon. There's no reason to believe that Jesus went over these borders into the land of the Gentiles, and the evidence suggests that he did not. He entered into a house on the Galilean side of the boundary, and in Mark's words, would have no man know it, but he could not be hid. A Syrophoenician woman was in deep distress because her daughter had an unclean spirit. She had heard of the fame of Jesus and, crossing the border, sought for him. After anxious inquiry, she found him. How her heart would leap with joy when she saw him. She threw herself at his feet. Have mercy on me, O Lord, thou son of David. My daughter is grievously vexed with the devil. She had found him, and her faith would suffice. She lay there at his feet. Her ears waited for the word which would turn the anguish in her souls into joy. But there was no response from the quiet figure. No gracious hand lifted her up. No power flowed forth to meet her cry of faith. No word of comfort broke the stillness. In silence, he watched her piteous appeal for help. And quietly, he left her burden with her burden and her grief. But still, she clung to her belief in him. She followed him, crying, imploring, beseeching, until her persistence disclosed a hardness in the heart of the disciples which must yet be softened. Send her away, they besought the Lord, for she crieth after us. Where lies the secret of his silence? Why are the fountains of his mercy sealed? Surely the answer lies in the manner of the woman's approach. Jesus was too great to be patronized. In her need, she had addressed him as thy son of David. What could she know of the meaning of this title she had so glibly used? David had not been king of Syria. His greater son had not crossed the borders of Galilee. Like the woman who touched the hem of his garment, she too had something to learn. Spiritual discernment of her relationship with Israel must take the blindness from her face. Jesus makes answers to the disciples, not to her. I am not sent but unto the lost sheep of the house of Israel. Quickly she discerns her mistake. Worshipping him, she implores him once more, appealing to him no longer as the son of David, who belonged only to Israel, but as the Lord, the universal helper of all mankind. She accepts his rebuke, but she will not leave him. Her need is desperate. Lord, help me. At last he speaks, his words press the teaching home. She will never forget now that salvation is of the Jews. It is a hard saying, but he has spoken, and in his words there is a gleam of hope. It is not meet to take the children's bread and cast it to the dogs. With that sudden inspiration which so often comes in the presence of Christ, she accepts his answer. There is hope. There are crumbs. True, Lord. Yet the dogs eat the crumbs that fall from their master's table. Surely it was given her in that moment not to speak. How could she have known that the children had so recently refused the bread? How had she learned that they had driven him at that moment to the very border of the table? And was not he the master of the dogs also? Was not she here in faith his feet. How beautifully Jesus responded to this woman who had wrestled with the sun and had prevailed. Her sorrow had endured for a night, but joy had come in the morning. O woman, great is thy faith. Be it unto thee even as thou wilt. Enlightened faith has at last called forth the responsive power of Jesus. And away over the border in a heathen land, a little girl stirred upon her bed, then lay back with the Father of Peace.